The Triumphs and Laments woodcut project started at the beginning of 2016. Each year, those of us working at David Crute Workshop take a three-week holiday, and we begin in the middle of January of the following year. And the first week back, I was discussing the next project with William and discussing the next series, and he had been working on drawings for a frieze that he was going to be launching in April 2016. And these drawings were at least 50, if not 80 at the beginning, that would run the length of a 550-meter wall along the Tiber River in Rome. Each was 10 meters high. And each was based on a history of Rome's greatest triumphs and the greatest tragedies. In no chronological order whatsoever, William chose a series of drawings that he'd been working on over the course of 2 years. We'd had seen some of this project developing in his studio at Arts on Main, and of which we had seen some of the drawings as well as one of the large stencils that he'd recreated to understand the scale of the work that was going to be on the wall. So when we started talking about the newest project, that came up as one idea, as did a series of portraits that he was working on for an exhibition at the Goodman Gallery. And of the two ideas, one was meant to be in linocut, and one was meant to be in woodcut. And when we were looking at how, each time when we look at how we work on a project with a particular artist and what kind of ideas we can elaborate on or work with, we start to kind of gauge what an artist might be looking at how to translate the work into print. We don't want it to be exactly the same, but we also don't want it to be entirely different. And from the portrait series that he was working on, it was on a number of ledger papers that were pasted together that he had painted with ink over top of. And for the woodcuts, they were on some of our printmaking paper with just ink on top of the sheet of paper. So there was a big difference in both series of work. And the first way we started to do experiments in the studio was to try a different kind of what we call shin kale. So it's different types of rice papers, Japanese papers that we print onto so that it provides a background color. And so we were going to use those sheets of paper to print linos on top of for the portraits, and that's what I started working on in the first place, to provide William with a variety of different tests. And I used an older lino plate of his as an example with a whole variety of different kinds of papers. And what that evolved into was us experimenting not only with different papers, but cut-up sheets of paper. And then when we started to experiment in the woodcuts for the second project, we started experimenting in different types of wood because we weren't entirely sure what kinds of wood would duplicate either the effect of what the artworks look like on the wall in Rome as the patina from pollution and everyday living soot, rain water that comes down the side of the wall. So either we wanted to replicate that in some kind of wood grain or some sort of effect, be it subtle or quite in your face. And what actually came about was that William wanted it to look black from a distance, and when you came up close, there was something more to it, so, which is also what the wall actually looks like. So between those two tests, we started realizing that we could use different kinds of sheets of paper and overlaps, as well as different wood grains to provide different kinds of effects that we were looking for to accentuate different parts of the paper, or not the paper, but different parts of the figures in each of his drawings. And what evolved out of not only the fact that we only have a 2-meter by 1-meter press, we could only print a certain size. As the wall images were so large, we decided that the print itself must be quite a large print. And because of the press size, as I was just mentioning, we could only do smaller sheets of paper that we would have to assemble like a puzzle. And so the beauty was, is incorporating both of those projects into one, we started to understand how to layer the paper sheets and then how to actually work with different types of wood grain to accentuate certain parts of William's drawing. And over the course of 6 weeks, I think we would have done 6 weeks of testing and then another 6 full weeks to try to make the very first woodcut. A series of complications arose, each with the woodblocks themselves, with the carving team, because of our understanding of lino and not necessarily of wood. And between all of this actually came a number of very positive guidelines on how to evolve the prints and how to move forward. And so the beauty is that working with William's drawing and trying to translate it into print, there are a number of different things that start to grow and change. Where William's drawing that he provides for us might be to scale, it is an ink drawing on white paper, whereas ours, with all the carved marks, becomes quite different. And with all the combinations of the sheets of paper, we do not glue them together, whereas William's drawing is glued together. So there are similarities, and then in translating into the print form, all of a sudden we started having collaged elements. We started having difficulty in printing each of these blocks, and as the series evolved, all of these complications become how pieces of the puzzle start getting added onto the works, and they therefore become unique. Rather than an entirely perfect technical series, these woodblocks actually have a lifespan of their own, and with each that we're growing in the series, there are different types of challenges. So William will provide us with different kinds of challenges in his drawing, and we will incorporate different types of wood depending on that. We start with a paper mock-up so that we understand how it's going to come together, and that evolves and changes as the work grows. The very final, right before we are finished, when we have up to, on average, it's about 11 woodblocks per image. Once those have been carved almost to their full extent, William comes in and changes everything right at the very end and puts the finishing touches on the work. So throughout the entire process, it's a conversation. It's trial and error to an extent. It's an understanding of the wood, and then a push and a shove from both those of us in the studio as well as William on the other side, as to keep pushing each other, so that we can keep evolving the series without it looking too much too similar nor too different. Mm. So as the series grows, it becomes what we're hoping will be a room full of these figures. What I love about working with William is that he provides an idea, but he doesn't give you all of the answers right off the bat. And because he's working in a number of different projects all at the same time, there is always information that comes later. So we didn't know anything about the frieze when we started working on this particular image. And the beauty in that lies in the fact that we kept asking questions throughout the process, and William provides you with answers in the image itself. So with Magtenia as an example, in the bottom left corner it says 1484, and that is the year that a series of paintings called The Triumph of Caesar was painted by the artist Andreas Mantegna. And of these 9 paintings, this particular image that we have recreated is called the Corset Bearers. And these are 3 soldiers who are bringing back the spoils of war. And so each part of the story actually is on the work itself. In the top corner, it also says T and L, which also references Triumphs and Laments, so the series title. As well as the 3 figures bringing back the spoils of war, therefore become what William's token imagery. And then the image of the flood, if you look online at some of the history, my husband has been going back and forth to Venice quite a bit in the last 4 years, and we are constantly talking about the flooding of each of the squares and how one has to go over in planks and how you have to get through sections of Venice during different seasons or different parts of the day in different ways. And so for part of Rome's history, there were also floods up until a point. And I believe the last flood was in 1937, which this photograph of the flood was taken in. And in the top left-hand corner is 1937, which references this flood. And so there are a series of plaques all over Rome and in Venice that actually tell you how high the floods went. And they provide like little tiny fingers, little hands, drawings of hands as to where the height of the flood. And William talks about these plaques. And starts to incorporate them. And in my mind, it always goes back to references. So these are direct references to what William has seen each and every single time he goes there, and to exactly how difficult it would have been keeping the water out of the city. So the Tiber River, the walls, were put up so that the city would no longer be flooded. So it's also, it's quite a nice reference to not only to the city, but also of like these tragedies, how many people would die in these floods, how high the devastation, and how difficult that was. And the beauty in a lot of the images that William chose for the wall are described in one of the books that is coming out only now, so a year and a half later. Some of the conversations that we have in the studio have absolutely nothing to do with what the work is about. So we're constantly guessing and highlighting certain aspects, not because of the conceptual nature of the artwork, but rather about the mark making. So it's a nice combination, once you actually understand it, to start to highlight how some of it might come together. The flood, the funny part too, is in the bottom corner it says 937. That's because William forgot the one by accident. There are points in a conversation that I have with William where all of a sudden I'll say to him, we're ready for the next one. And the the way William works is quite astonishing to watch. And not only can he work on any number of projects at one time, but he can provide you with what you need exactly when you need it. So I said to him, we're ready for the next one. And within 2 days, the drawing was finished. And then it takes us 3 weeks. We got the drawing the beginning of January in 2017, and we have to get it photographed, and only after it's photographed can we start to try to figure out how to conceptualize the wood blocks and the paper layout and get working on the blocks themselves. And how Lampedusa actually evolved was also under a certain amount of time restriction, and one woman's sorrow that needed to come through in how we were carving and in how the turn of how her face turns and in how her elbow and her foot, there needed to somehow be a sorrow there. And the text on that particular piece says Lampedusa and it says 2014, when in fact the trauma that it's describing is a shipwreck off the island of Lampedusa that happened in October of 2013. And this particular woman is one of the widows and is either the mother or the wife of someone who drowned on a ship that was 80 meters from the island. Has the boat caught a light? And so we selected a variety of different kinds of wood grains, but we also wanted to accentuate some of those figures in that sadness. And I think that it works for that particular image. And has become part of the way of which we have now started to look at the conceptual elements or the story that William's trying to tell through some of these figures, which differs from the very first woodcut that we would have worked on because we didn't actually know any of those stories. So as this particular book on the entire series comes to light, it's interesting to figure out how William perceived or created some of these works, and then to be able to read and ask him further questions on why he's choosing the particular images that he's choosing along the way, as well as incorporating what we know about the technical elements. So together, the series is evolving in different kinds of ways, and we hope that that naturally is coming through in the final piece.
Bear in mind that everything is subject to change, and I mean everything. From the weather, to the wood warping, to the ink drying as you addition, even to the emotional state of your co-workers. We're all human after all. But speaking on being human, I did say everything's subject to change. So we have a very laxed relationship between William and the print shop, obviously. He comes in, he gives us certain directions on what his desired outcome is. And us being the technical advisors, we let him know and how best to tackle that. Not always do we meet the criteria, hence the whole change aspect of it all. He gives us direction, and of course, some things get lost in translation. A certain scenario that happened was when he told us to carve in certain white areas into the final image, but then those white areas just so happened to overlap a face, a particular face within the Mantegna print. And because of the pop-in, pop-out relationship between him and the studio, that direction kind of lost its way, and one face in particular just happened to disappear. He did not mind the fact that it disappeared. He just only asked that we try and rectify it. So with that instance, I had to naturally carve the face in lino and then reattach it to the pre-existing print to cover up the now mistake. His reaction was welcomed. Whether it was good or bad, it was welcomed because it was a mistake on our part. But him being a very super easy artist to work with, he made it acceptable. He made every mistake an acceptable mistake because he actually didn't want his initial idea to be the final idea. He wanted it to be a conversation between us and him, a constant back and forth in finding what the work is and how it looks, so that by the time it is actually exhibited to the audience, it is a direct interpretation of what his time in the studio was with us. So you're not only getting to see his initial idea, but you're getting to see our marks in it, in trying to portray his idea as best as we could.
The way we planned out the woodblocks was we had William's drawing that he did to the size that he wanted the prints to be, and that was photographed and projected onto a wall. And we planned out what different types of wood would print in different ways. We planned out how that specific grain would go with William's image in certain areas. So myself, Spongseni, and Jill, with William, planned out how the different woods would intersect the image, where they'd line up, and what direction the grain would go in. After that, the woods were sent to Alan Epstein, who is a carpenter, and he veneered the planks of wood to a baseboard of marine ply. So with all these different grains of wood running in different directions on the same block, each of them want to stretch and warp in different directions according to the humidity and the temperature that we're printing in. So these blocks change according to season and climate. So we have certain blocks that will print perfectly in summer, for example, and during the winter time they'll completely change. So some softer woods will sink with the pressure, while harder woods retain their shape, as well as some harder woods will bow upwards, while others bow downwards, and this is all happening on the same block. So it's up to myself and Spongseni, both with the printing and the inking, to make sure that all these dips and grooves in the block are inked up correctly, and we use correct blankets, foam, and layering during the printing process to make sure that the blocks print flat, but we get a consistent grain throughout the entire image. So why these different wood grains running in different directions is really important, and it's not one flat block of singular type of wood, is because we wanted different grains in different parts of the image with different intensities. And I think that adds to both William's drawings and the way the blocks are cut, because you have the intensity of some of the carved marks, the intensity of William's line in terms of his ink drawings, and now the intensity of the wood grain. And all of these things can be controlled by conversations myself and Spongseni and Jill have with William in relation to cutting the blocks, seeing William's decision in mark making for each of the drawings as the work progresses, as well as William and Jill's collaboration in figuring out which wood grains go in which directions and how they cut the image. So all these images, we could have easily have made lino cuts, and it would have been, you know, really flat, really easy, well, a lot easier to print than it is now. And I suppose, like, easier to assemble, but the wood grains and how we've gone through the process of picking out specific wood grains that William enjoys from a wide variety of samples that we chose means that we know offhand exactly which types of wood are going to print with which grain. And in that way, we can control. Also, like, we can control what the image looks like in discussion with William, but also how flat our blocks can be by figuring out which directions to put harder wood so that they counter each other and stay flat.